It is Monday, June 1st, and welcome to Crea 24. I'm your host, Alana Hill. An explosion at a Hanwha aerospace plant in Daejeon has killed at least five people and wounded two others. More on that in news briefing. On In Depth, we look at the weak Korean won, round-the-clock currency trading, new single-stock leveraged ETFs, and the BOK's upgraded growth outlook. And on Sports Roundup, we're delving into South Korea's World Cup preparations, a shake-up at the KFA, and LIV Golf in Busan. Let's start Korea 24 right now. An explosion occurred at a factory of Hanwha Aerospace in the central city of Daejeon on Monday morning, killing at least five people. Flames from the blast were extinguished after 2 hours. Our KBS World Radio News reporter, Bae Ji-yeon, joins us now in the studio to give us the latest on this story and other headlines of the day. Hello, Ji-yeon.
Hello, Alana.
So police and fire authorities reported five fatalities, saying another person suffered severe full-body burns and one has minor injuries. Ji-yeon, tell us what happened.
Emergency calls from the explosion were logged at around 11 a.m. Monday, prompting the fire agency to dispatch some 100 first responders to the site, along with some 30 vehicles and pieces of equipment. Firefighters extinguished the flames at 1:07 p.m. after 2 hours.
And June, what do we know about this facility in Daejeon?
The facility is a state-protected site, and police and fire officials plan to obtain the building's blueprints to conduct a comprehensive investigation. The defense facility where the explosion occurred is involved in the research and production of guided weapons and propulsion systems for aerospace and aviation. Take note that rocket propellant-related explosions occurred at this very site in 2018 and 2019, resulting in 8 deaths.
What has been the government's response on this latest incident?
Well, Labor Minister Kim Myung-hoon visited the site of the deadly explosion and ordered a thorough investigation. The Ministry of Employment and Labor said it has formed a dedicated team of more than 20 investigators. The ministry vowed to conduct a thorough investigation to determine the exact cause of the blast through on-site inspections and find out whether the company complied with workplace safety obligations under relevant laws, including the Serious Accidents Punishment Act. The ministry added that the team will work with prosecutors and other agencies to analyze the circumstances of the accident and identify those responsible.
Well, with just 2 days left until the June 3rd local elections, both the ruling and opposition parties have toned down their campaigns and decided to refrain from music and dancing in light of that fatal explosion at the Hanwha Aerospace Daejeon factory. Tell us more about the latest campaigning.
Ruling Democratic Party Chair Jeong Chung-rae, who heads the party's election committee, instructed all candidates and staff members around the country to halt campaigning on Monday. Chung also banned the use of local songs and dances by campaign staffers stumping across the country and called on candidates to halt campaign activities. Over at the main opposition People Power Party, chair and head of the party's election committee, Jang Dong-hyuk, instructed candidates and staff members to avoid playing campaign songs and performing dances, calling for a calm campaign atmosphere 2 days before the elections. Chang cancelled all his public appearances in light of the explosion.
Meanwhile, I understand that early voting rate for the June 3rd local elections and by-elections reached a record high for local elections.
That's correct, Alana. The National Election Commission said the turnout for early voting held Friday and Saturday last week stood at a record 23.51%. This means that a total of nearly 10.5 million voters cast their ballots out of 44.65 million eligible voters.
Let's now get some economic news. Exports in May set a record for the month on the back of an ongoing super cycle in semiconductors. Ji-yeon, give us the figures.
According to data from the Ministry of Trade, Industry and Resources on Monday, exports rose 53.2% year-on-year to a monthly record of $87.75 billion. Shipments have surpassed $80 billion for the third consecutive month, and the average daily volume in May broke $4 billion for the first time. Semiconductor shipments led the gains, jumping more than 169% to an all-time high of $37.16 billion last month.
And how did imports fare during that same period?
Imports also increased 20.8% to $60.8 billion. This resulted in a 16th straight trade surplus of $26.95 billion.
Well, talking about new records, the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index surged to another record high on Monday.
Yes, it did after closing above the 8,780 mark for the first time. The KOSPI jumped 312.23 points or 3.68% to close at a new high of 8,788.38. Based on Monday's closing price, the index is just 211 points away from the 9,000-point mark and only about 125 points away from the intraday high. Meanwhile, Samsung Electronics surged 10.09% to close at a record high of 349,000 won, with its market capitalization surpassing 2 quadrillion won for the first time. That's some 1.3 trillion U.S. dollars.
Well, staying on economic news, unionized workers at Kakao will launch a partial strike next week, calling for job stability and an improvement in the company's compensation structure. Gian, do we know when this strike will be staged?
Yes, in a statement on Monday, the union at Kakao Corporation said it will stage on Wednesday of next week a four-hour walkout and a rally near the company's headquarters in Pangyo, Gyeonggi Province. The union said it will stage a partial strike only in consideration of concerns over a possible disruption in the Kakao Talk messaging service. However, it was quick to add that it could expand the size of the walkout depending on future negotiations with management. The announcement comes after a second round of mediated talks between labor and management fell through last week, with the two sides still divided over allocation of last year's operating profit for bonuses and inclusion of restricted stock units in the incentive program.
Now let's get an update on former President Yoon Suk-yeol's insurrection case. A special counsel team looking into the case says Yoon began preparing for the December 2024 martial law declaration almost a year before the declaration. Joo-yeon, give us the details.
Kim Ji-mi, an assistant special counsel on the team, told reporters at a briefing on Monday that the team confirmed through its investigation into former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Kim Myung-soo that plans were already in place as of November 2023. The probe team also found that during martial law, several working-level officials raised concerns about both the declaration and the deployment of troops to the National Assembly.
In other headlines, the inaugural Korea-Africa Foreign Ministers meeting kicked off in Seoul on Monday. What did South Korea's Foreign Minister Cho Hyun say in the gathering?
In his opening speech, Cho expressed South Korea's willingness to strengthen cooperation with African countries to address global challenges and promote opportunities for growth. Amid rapid changes in the global order, Cho said the world is facing multifaceted challenges across various sectors, including supply chains, energy and food security, which are increasing uncertainty in the global economy. Cho noted that there are limits to what individual countries can do on their own and stressed that closer cooperation between South Korea and African states is more important than ever.
How many African countries are taking part in this meeting?
Representatives from 50 African countries and the heads of four regional organizations, the African Union, the African Development Bank, the African Continental Free Trade Area, and the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are taking part. Cho said based on the results of the event, they can begin discussions on holding the second Korea-Africa Summit in 2029 to continue the work started at the first summit 2 years ago.
And for our final story today, the National Weather Forecast shows a mix of sun and clouds with showers for southern regions and Jeju Island. Gian, just how much rain are we talking about?
According to the Korea Meteorological Administration, areas in South Gyeongsang Province and South Jeolla Province are expected to receive more than 80 millimeters of rain between Monday and Tuesday, with the mountains of Jeju getting upward of 150 millimeters. In particular, there is a possibility of torrential downpours in these areas around dawn.
And I understand that tomorrow is going to be quite hot.
Yes, morning lows will range from 14 to 20 degrees Celsius, with daytime highs between 24 and 33 degrees, bringing the hottest weather so far this year to many areas. In Seoul, the low will hover around 19 degrees and the high could reach 33 degrees in the afternoon. Looking ahead to Wednesday, the local election day, expect cloudy skies with showers for inland southern regions.
And that's where we'll wrap up today's news briefing. Thanks so much, Gian, for bringing us the headlines.
Thanks, Alana.
The Korean won remains stubbornly weak against the U.S. dollar, even as South Korea's benchmark KOSPI continues to reach new heights, smashing through the 8,000-point mark. The won's weakness also comes amid robust semiconductor exports. Meanwhile, the country launched its first single-stock leveraged ETFs last week, offering products linked to Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix that aim to deliver twice the daily performance of the underlying shares. But authorities expressed concerns that these products should only be considered for short-term investment. To take a deep dive into these issues and more, we're joined today on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Great to have you with us, Professor Yang.
Happy to be here.
Professor Yang, let's start with the foreign exchange market. One of the biggest puzzles for investors right now is that the Korean won has remained under pressure, even as South Korean equities continue to rally and semiconductor exports remain strong. The won-dollar exchange rate is hovering above the psychologically important 1,500 won threshold. Professor, why is the won's weakness so persistent?
Okay, well, there are some long-term factors which make the Korean currency market, foreign exchange market, vulnerable to these type of fluctuations. And then there's particular short-term factors which may have worsened the problem and kept the rate above 1,500. So let me start with the long-term factors first. First is that the currency market in Korea, foreign currency market, is small compared to the size of the Korean economy. So relatively small transactions can have abnormally large effect on the $1 exchange rate. And then what influences the Korean exchange rate the most? Well, there were usually two reasons. The first reason was how much did the Korean exporters earn in dollars and how much did they sell those dollars in the Korean currency market. And the second factor is how much did foreign investors bring dollar in to invest in Korean stock market or take out of the Korean stock market and put it back into dollars. So if you look at, say, the exchange rate fluctuations 2 or 3 years ago, the biggest daily fluctuation was correlated with the stock market transactions by foreigners. But now there are more transaction overseas investment by Korean investors, so that investing outside Korea has also become a fairly important factor in deciding the foreign exchange rate as well. And then Korea only has formal currency markets for U.S. dollar and Chinese yuan. So if you want to invest in other countries like Japan or Europe, you first have to exchange your money into dollars and then take it out of the country and exchange that into euros, yen, or whatever. So every foreign transaction is sort of concentrated on the U.S. dollar. And then one of the reasons why the Korean market stays small is that Korea has a lot of regulations meant to reduce uncertainties and danger that comes from some foreign exchange, foreign currency transactions. But large investors like risk. So because Korean currency market tries to limit risk, tries to limit risky products, that may be one of the factors why Korean currency market remains small. So we had these structural problems to begin with, and then I mentioned that there are particular factors which drove the market above 1,500. The first, it's not really a short-term factor anymore, but the U.S. interest rate is still higher than the Korean interest rate, the policy interest rate. So even though U.S. is a U.S. Investment is thought of as safer investment, you get more returns by investing in the United States. That may be one of the reasons why Korean investors are going out to, say, United States to make their investment, because they feel that it is, in the longer term, a safer investment, and in the longer term has more consistent returns. And then second, as we all know, the Korean stock market has experienced unprecedented returns in the last year and a half, and a lot of foreign investors have put their money in Korea, even though a lot of money, that money has went back out because Korean investors are investing in foreign markets. But still, right now, foreigners seem to be selling their Korean stock, probably because they because the Korean market has done so well that they feel that right now is a good time for profit taking rather than further investment. So right now, the foreign investors are selling their stock and putting it into dollars and taking it back rather than keeping their dollars in the United States. So that is a factor as well, I think. And then the Korean exporters are not really selling their dollars in the Korean market anymore, partially because these companies have pledged to make physical investment in the United States. That means they'll need dollars for investment in the United States. So the exporters are not putting their dollars into domestic currency market as much as before.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Bank of Korea said that the won appeared excessively weak relative to economic fundamentals and has warned that authorities would take decisive action if necessary. What will help the won gain against the US dollar? And what's your outlook for the won dollar exchange rate?
Okay, well, this type of verbal intervention or so-called jawboning, it has an effect maybe for a couple of days, but if it's not followed with a concrete policy, it runs out of steam pretty quickly. So it might have an effect maybe today, tomorrow, to stop won from weakening further unless it's backed up by other policies. It's probably not going to have that much of an effect. Now, one policy that was designed to try to bring the dollars back to the back to Korea is so-called reshoring investment account, or RIA, which exempted taxes if the investment that was made abroad came back to Korea. But it turns out that this policy was not very attractive. It wasn't very attractive to Korean investors because right now it doesn't seem like that much dollar actually came back to Korea. Some of the reasons may be that the Korean investors were investing abroad. They may feel that Korean market is too unstable. And remember, only Samsung and Hynix really gained significantly in value. Other stocks, well, Hyundai Motors and some other defense stocks did well, but still, the rise in stock prices in Korea has been very limited to a small number of firms. And there are still problems with Korean corporate governance. So they may still prefer their investment in the United States or other countries. And further, if you bring this money back to Korea under the RIA, then you have to keep it in Korean securities market for 1 year. Mm-hmm. So that's a year that they cannot touch this investment, either take it out or to invest elsewhere. So that may not be very attractive to these investors. So this RIA has not been as successful so far as had been hoped.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's now turn to a policy change that potentially could reshape how the currency is traded. Starting in July, South Korea's foreign exchange market will offer round-the-clock $1 trading aimed at improving access for global investors across time zones. $1 trading hours, which currently run from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day, Seoul time, will be extended. As of July 6th, there will be a continuous trading period from 6 a.m. Monday to 6 a.m. Saturday during New York daylight saving time. However, there are concerns that it could leave the won more vulnerable to overnight swings when trading volumes are thin. Professor, what do you make of this expanded trading hours, and what impact do you expect the change to have?
Okay, well, I don't know if listeners will remember, but about 2 or 3 years ago, the Korean currency market ran from about 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. But then that was extended until 2 a.m. Korea time. And that was made because, first, Korea wanted to perhaps make the currency market larger, and more trading time may have meant more volume. And then Korea wanted the Korean stock market to be included in the so-called MSCI index run by Morgan Stanley. That's a stock index of advanced countries. And in order to do so, one of the recommendations that the Morgan Stanley made was that Korea extend its currency market hours. As a first stage, they extended the closing hours from 3 p.m. to 2 a.m. the next day. And it turned out that it doesn't make that much of a difference. It didn't really have that much of an effect in the market. I expect that if they do extend it further into making Korea a 24-hour market, it probably won't have that much of an effect. Theoretically, you can have larger, smaller fluctuations. As you mentioned, there could be thinner markets in the middle of the night. A thinner market means there's less transactions, so even medium-sized transactions can have a huge effect on the exchange rate. And sometimes you can use the time where the market closes as sort of a cooling down period if the exchange rate is rising too quickly or falling too quickly. We won't have that cooling off period anymore. But having a larger market means perhaps there will be more smaller fluctuations, but less larger fluctuations usually. Okay. There's, of course, some exceptions to the rule, but still, that's what we usually expect. So if this move is successful and if the market volume does come bigger, then we may have some more smaller fluctuations, but less large fluctuations. But given the experience that we had so far with extending the hours from 3 p.m. to 2 a.m., probably not much of an effect at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, turning now to the stock market, South Korea has also introduced a new type of investment product. Launched last week, the country introduced its first single stock leveraged ETFs, offering products linked to Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix. So leveraged products seek to deliver twice the daily return of an individual stock, which means daily price fluctuations could reach up to 60%. Professor, could you tell us more about the first single stock leveraged ETFs? What they are, how they work, and why the government decided to launch them?
Okay, let's start with the basics. ETP means exchange traded products. So these are financial products that includes mutual funds, derivatives, options that you can buy or sell at exchanges. So the advantage is that because you can buy and sell these at exchanges, it's easier to buy and sell these products than buying the underlying stock or underlying derivatives or options themselves. Now, there's several types of ETP, one of which is ETF, exchange-traded funds. Now, these are funds whose shares you can buy or sell at exchanges. You can think of these as sort of a mutual fund. Now, the purpose of ETF in a lot of ways is you want to reduce your risk. So what the textbook economics recommend is that you have a very diversified portfolio. So say a portfolio that's based on a KOSPI index. If you have a KOSPI-based, index-based fund, then that means you own all the shares that are in the KOSPI at the same proportion as the KOSPI. Now, obviously, if a single person tries to mimic the KOSPI, it'll be very expensive. You have to buy a certain number of all the stocks that are bought and sold in the KOSPI index. So you let the securities company do it. They set up a mutual fund that mimics partially the KOSPI index, and then you can buy a share in that fund. And if those shares are traded at exchanges, then that's an ETF. And if you buy an ETF, it's like you're investing in a fairly diversified KOSPI index fund. So you're supposed to reduce your risk that way. And there's ETN, exchange traded notes, which are financial products that are bought and sold in the exchanges. but those are formed from derivatives, options, swaps, and so on. Now, there's leverage ETF, which was what you were asking about in the question. The leverage ETF are funds which use derivatives, futures, options, to try to magnify the gains that you can get from these type of investment. And that means you can have higher returns, but also you're exposed to higher risk, so you can have worse returns or losses if the funds go down. And then there's so-called double leverage ETF, which is buying these leverage ETF with borrowed money. So borrowed money is leveraged to buy leveraged ETF, so double leverage ETF. And since you are using borrowed money and you're usually borrowing at a margin, if you your losses are larger than a certain percentage, your entire investment can be wiped out. So those are the very dangerous type of funds. Now, I said that originally you wanted ETF to reduce your risk by diversifying. But the problem with these ETFs, which are centered only on Samsung or Hynix stocks, is that they're concentrated in one company. So you're not diversifying. So it'll be more dangerous than general ETF to start with. But then if you have a leverage ETF and then you also have a double leverage ETF, obviously that's going to be much, much more dangerous. Everything is going to depend on the fortunes of one company rather than diversified set of companies. And if the stock prices go down, say, about 1%, that'll be doubled with the leverage ETF. And then if your margin is low, then you may lose your entire investment. Mm. So that's why the ETF is dangerous, especially the double leveraged ETF. But they're so attractive to investors who may not have that much money to spend, because you can borrow a lot of the money that you invest and then take the returns if the market continues to rise. So it is, in some sense, very seductive. But then it is also very dangerous. If you have, say, one or two bad days, then your investment may be wiped out.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you and expand a little bit more, Professor, about those dangers, because as you just mentioned, with higher potential returns also comes greater risk. And the regulator has warned that the leverage structure may compound losses in the event of a negative event, and stressed that these products should only be considered for short-term investment. Professor, what's your thoughts on this warning?
Okay, well, especially with double leverage, I'm not sure if I would recommend that to anybody. As I said, you're borrowing money usually on a margin. And if you remember your economic history, these type of margin loan investment is what was responsible for, or largely responsible for, 1929 stock market crash in the United States. So I wouldn't recommend this to anybody. But as I said, because you're using in part security company's money that you borrowed, there is a potential to make a very large return with very low investment of your own money. So again, this is very seductive, especially where we see the stock market or stock prices of Samsung and Hynix rising every day. But as I said, sometimes if you have, say, one or two or three bad days, then that might wipe out your margins completely and you may lose your entire investment. So if you have, say, a day or two or maybe a week of stock prices rising, you may say, okay, I was lucky enough, let's stop while I'm ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, to wrap up, I'd like to look at what all this means for South Korea's growth outlook. The Bank of Korea last week raised its growth outlook for the domestic economy from 2% to 2.6%. The central bank's revised forecast is higher than the potential growth rate of around 1.8% and the highest since the 2.7% projected in 2022. It comes as South Korea's economy faces challenges including rising inflation and the weakening won, which we've discussed amid the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. Professor, what's your take on the BOK's revised outlook? And ultimately, do you think that that 2.6% growth rate is achievable?
Okay, well, one, it's achievable, but it'll be very volatile. It'll be very risky. There's a very good chance we won't make it at all, but it is certainly within the realm of possibility. Now, if we look at, say, the various growth projections that various organizations have made about this year's Korean growth starting at the end of last year. Last year, most projections were centered around 1.8. Then at the beginning of this year, it was centered maybe around 2.0, 2.1. And then when the Iran war started, those projections started going down to anywhere between 1.0 to 1.8. Mm-hmm. And then when Korea had that first incredible first quarter growth of 1.7%, and this was basically what they expected the entire year's growth to be at the end of last year. After that announcement, everybody's been readjusting their projections upwards, and Bank of Korea has been no exception. So they're now revising it to 2.6. Government has revised it to 2.5. Some research institutes like Hyundai Research Institute has revised it to 2.7. So again, it's well within the realm of possibility, but in some sense, it depends entirely on semiconductors. If you look at the subcategories, consumption projection went up from 1.8% to 2%. So that's not that big. Construction, it actually went down. Their projection was 1.0 to 0.6. That's probably due to higher cost of building materials because of the Iran war. Investment and exports rose tremendously. Exports projection was 2.1%, now it is 4.9%. Investment, it was 2.4%, now it's 4.4%. Those two are probably very dependent on semiconductors. Mm-hmm. That means if the current global demand for semiconductors continue, then there's a very good chance that we will make these projections, make these targets. But if the semiconductor demand falls, say there's a lot of concerns that the AI rally and the data center construction in the U.S. is a form of a bubble. So if that is indeed a bubble and it bursts and the construction slows down considerably or stops, then that means Korean semiconductor exports will fall tremendously, and then there's no way that we can make these growth projections. Mm-hmm. But if the semiconductor demand keeps up, then the growth rate that they mentioned here is certainly within the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all we'll have to wrap up today's discussion. Professor Yang Jin-suk from the Catholic University of Korea, thank you so much for helping us break down these developments.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index spiked 312.23 points, or 3.68% on Monday, to close at a record high of 8,788.38. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 24.77 points, or 2.3%, to close at 1,050.03. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Alana.
Daniel, what's our starting point today?
The government has withdrawn its proposal to allow mixed-gender hospital rooms, and this comes amid criticism that the move would constitute a violation of patient privacy and safety.
Okay, so first the government had wanted to make changes to try and abolish requirements for hospital rooms to be segregated by gender. Can you fill us in on why they were initially pursuing this change?
So the government initially sought an amendment to the enforcement rules of the Medical Service Act in order to eliminate the gender segregation standard, which is a move deemed necessary so as to bridge the gap between the law and actual practices in medical institutions.
Okay, so then what prompted the decision to withdraw the proposal?
Well, the Ministry of Health and Welfare announced on Monday that it was pulling back the plan to reflect public opinion and issues raised during the advance legislative notice period. There's been floods of objections on platforms such as the National Legislative Center, and many arguing that the government failed to sufficiently consider privacy and safety issues, pointing out that patients often have to change clothes, replace catheters, and receive other treatments in hospital rooms. Critics also stress that sharing a space with someone of the opposite sex, separated only by a curtain, constitutes a violation of human rights. Concerns were also raised about the increased risk of sex crimes, such as illegal filming and sexual harassment, which have become heightened social issues.
So is this final?
Well, the ministry did decide to add a provision allowing some exceptions in intensive care units, as it can get difficult to separate patients by gender under various circumstances in such wards. Exceptions would also apply to two patients such as married couple or immediate family members, so they can share a two-person room for joint caregiving purposes.
So ultimately, the government is stepping back from the broader change, but leaving some room for practical exceptions. Let's move on to our next story now.
If you're in Seoul, be aware that starting today, June 1st, those caught feeding pigeons will be required to pay fines.
Okay, well, we have covered related government measures being reviewed and set to be implemented in our previous edition of Korea Trending. What's the latest?
According to the Seoul Metropolitan Government, those caught feeding pigeons in no-feeding zones, including major parks and squares in the city, will be required to pay fines of up to 1 million won. That's about $660. A big change from previous measures that involve warnings instead of fines.
So Daniel, give us the specifics about these areas that fall under the no feeding rule and also more details about these pretty hefty fines.
So in total, about 38 public spaces, including 22 parks, including Seoul Forest and Porame, four plazas, 11 Han River parks, they'll be under strict monitoring following the strengthened enforcement of no feeding zones for pigeons. First-time offenders are slapped with a 200,000 won fine. That's about the amount that climbs. That's about, I believe, $130. And the amount climbs to about 500,000 won and reaches the maximum of about 1 million for those caught for the third time.
And do we know why authorities are, some of the reasons authorities are giving for these, for enforcing these stern measures?
The pigeons commonly seen across the city originally lived in mountainous areas and in the wild, but because of the continued feeding by people, they spread their habitat throughout the city. Along with their urban population hike, hygiene and landscape problems such as droppings and foul odors have been repeatedly raised. Some experts see this move as an essential one that can help provide pleasant environment for residents while reducing wild animals' dependence on people.
Well, it'll be interesting to see whether these tougher penalties actually change behaviour and help reduce some of those hygiene concerns in public spaces. Let's jump in now to our final story of the day.
Jensen Huang, the CEO of U.S. chip giant NVIDIA, is expected to visit South Korea this week and meet with local movers and shakers, namely in related tech sectors.
Well, after that super memorable chicken and beer meeting with Samsung and Hyundai chiefs last year, speculation, I'm sure, is running rampant on what's going to be on his itinerary this time around. Who are the big names expected to take part?
According to industry sources on Monday, Huang is scheduled to arrive in Seoul on Thursday night and hold meetings the following day. Among those expected to attend the gatherings are SK Group Chairman Choi Tae-won, LG Group Chairman Koo Kwang-mu, and Yi Hae-jin, founder and board chair of Naver. Among the duo that sat down with Huang for the CIMAC meeting last year, Hyundai Motor Group Executive Chair Jung Hee-sun, who attended that session, is reportedly positively reviewing joining in. Samsung Electronics Chairman Lee Jae-yong, though, is not expected to attend due to an overseas committee's schedule.
And I know what's expected to be the main focus of these talks?
Participants are expected to hold a series of meetings on ways to improve AI semiconductor cooperation, and the topics could go beyond that to include robotics and physical AI, an emerging field focused on integrating AI with real-world machines and systems.
Well, other than these very serious business meetings, do we know if there's any unique or fun events planned during the upcoming visit?
So other than those meetings, Naver and NVIDIA are set to be in discussions so Huang can visit Naver 1784, the company's second office building located in Gyeonggi Province, considered a testbed for Naver's technologies, including robots and 5G networks. While NVIDIA officials said there are no confirmed details on the itinerary of Huang's visit to Korea, there are reports that he may attend a KBO or Korea Pro Baseball League game in Jamsil and take to the mound as a ceremonial pitcher for the Doosan Bears, and that he could host meetings that bring together business people of various sectors.
Well, if those reports are accurate, a baseball game would certainly be a more relaxed way for Huang to connect with Korea beyond the boardroom. That's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you so much, Daniel, for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm baritone Taehan Kim, winner of the Queen Elizabeth competition. You're now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Time now for Sports Roundup, your weekly look at all the action from the big wins and tough losses to the stories making headlines on and off the field. And joining us now on the line to help us do that, we have our regular contributor, sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News Agency. Ji-ho, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, great to be here.
Well, let's begin today with South Korea's latest World Cup tune-up. It was a 5-0 win over Trinidad and Tobago in Utah yesterday. Lots of positives across the pitch, and with the tournament fast approaching, really offered us plenty to talk about. So first off, let's walk through that match.
Yeah, sure. Captain Son Heung-min scored twice in the first half, and the forward that replaced him in the second half, Cho Kyu-sung, also netted twice. And Hwang Hee-chan had the other goal for South Korea in their breezy victory. Korea didn't get much going in the first 30 or so minutes. Park Seung-ho had a header that nearly gave Korea the lead, but goalkeeper Jabari Bryce made a big save. And then Son connected with Kim Moon-hwan for the opening goal in the 40th minute and scored a penalty just a couple of minutes later. And Korea's offense developed a much better flow after that. Cho Kyu-sung, of course, scoring twice, one with his head, the other with his foot. And Hwang scoring the penalty himself in the second half to round out the scoring for the Korean team.
So it sounds like Korea needed a little bit of time to settle into the match, but once that first goal went in, the attack really came to life. You know, a 5-goal performance, it's certainly an encouraging sign heading into the World Cup. Trinidad and Tobago didn't offer much of a challenge for South Korea, but ultimately, what were the takeaways from this win?
Yeah, I think the concerns going into this match were that, you know, maybe, you know, this country was not going to be enough of a challenge for Korean team mm-hmm. going into the World Cup. But you know what? Son said, it doesn't matter who the opponents are. It's always nice to win matches 5-0. And he said this win was a major confidence boost for his team, especially after they lost by a combined 5-0 to Ivory Coast and Austria back in March. Mm-hmm. But Son also said he and his teammates should stay composed, not get too high after wins like that, and not get too low after losses like the ones they had in March, because there are bigger matches coming up. Coach Ong Myung-bo said he was pleased with both the outcome and the process in this match. He was especially encouraged to see Son score a couple of goals, because, of course, Son came into this camp not having scored once for LAFC during MLS play. And, of course, the midfielder Hwang In-bum also returned from injury after being out for a couple of months after hurting his ankle in March. He played about 30 minutes and looked pretty good. And defender Lee Ki-hyuk, many people consider him the biggest surprise to the squad. making his just his second international appearance in this one, played a really strong match as a starting defender on the left side, was one of only two players to play the entire 90 minutes, and he showed why he deserved the selection this time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a confidence boost. And as you said, Jiho, you know, a result like this gives Korea something to build on, especially after those quite difficult and, I think fair to say, disappointing March mm-hmm. matches. What can we expect from the next match against El Salvador?
Yeah, so it's going to kick off 10 a.m. Thursday Korean time. And Coach Hong will likely use a rotation and give players who came off the bench or didn't play in yesterday's match, they might get a chance to play mm-hmm. or even start against El Salvador. You know, Son Heung-min might start the match again, but or might start the match on the bench, or he might get a start and not play as much as he did yesterday. And Cho Gi-sung might get a longer look at the striker position. Oh Hyung-kyu, who was thought to have the inside track on the job, actually set out Sunday with a minor injury, but it's not considered serious. He could be back in action by the next match on Thursday morning. A couple of players picked up unfortunate injuries during yesterday's match. Defender Cho Yoo-min actually is out of the World Cup. You know, he suffered a foot injury, was carried off the field on the back of a team trainer yesterday, and he has been ruled out. Very tough news for him. Midfielder Pae Joon-ho hurt his ankle on a hard foul, but he also had to leave the game, but he's not... you know, he's considered day-to-day. He's likely will stay with the team for the rest of this camp and hopefully the World Cup. You know, Cho Yoo-min, that his absence will hurt. He's a starting caliber center back. He's also a great guy in the locker room, very upbeat, very outgoing, kind of brings the guys together. But, you know, they're going to miss him. With Pae, you know, he's considered a backup as an attacking midfielder at this point. But any injury this close to the World Cup can really hurt this team.
Definitely, those injury concerns are certainly something to watch closely because, as you said, Jiho, at this stage, any setback can affect preparations, especially with the World Cup so close. And sticking with football, because just a couple of days before the match, Korea Football Association President Chung Mong-gyu announced he's going to step down after the end of the World Cup tournament. Seems as though he finally caved into growing pressure to quit. Timing is a bit interesting. Jiho, tell us more about this surprising decision.
Interesting indeed. I mean, you know, this announcement came just days before the first tuna match and then only, you know, a couple of weeks before the first World Cup match for Team Korea. And he announced Friday afternoon here that he's going to step away after the World Cup. And in the meantime, he will focus on providing the best support for the national team at the tournament. He has been at the KFA's helm since 2013. He's been a highly unpopular figure in recent years. You know, there was that head-scratching hiring of Jurgen Klinsmann as head coach for the men's national team, and even more controversial decision to replace him with Hong Myung-bo in the summer of 2024. And the KFA was blasted for its lack of transparency in the process, and Chung even faced questioning in the parliament over that decision. The sports ministry later conducted an extensive probe into the whole controversy, ended up demanding at least a suspension of Chung and other senior executives at the KFA. You know, KFA and the ministry got locked in a legal battle over this issue. The KFA won a court injunction, which allowed Chung to run for president last year, and he won the election, obviously. And then a Seoul court recently ruled that the ministry's demand for disciplinary action was justified, and KFA actually has since appealed that decision as well. So this is not, you know, there's no end in sight at this point. But along the way, fans began showing up at national team matches with signs calling on Chung to resign. Mm-hmm. And both he and Hong got booed mercilessly. And at some point, people just stopped showing up. So, you know, national team matches were played in front of a lot of empty seats recently. And obviously very unusual for the head of a national football federation to quit, or at least announce that he's going to quit, only days before the World Cup. But in the meantime, the national team will try to soldier on and take care of business on the pitch.
Right. It's definitely a major development. And again, left scratching my head with the timing. But as you said, hopefully the team can just focus on the matches ahead. We'll move on to golf now. Busan just hosted its first LIV Golf Korea tournament, this past week. And Joaquin Niemann of Chile won in a playoff to the delight of thousands of fans. Jiho, give us a recap of the event.
Sure. Well, I actually covered this tournament this past week. You know, massive turnout down in Busan for this tournament. Joaquin Niemann, they call him Waco. He defeated Taylor Gooch of the U.S. with a birdie on the first playoff hole at Asia Country Club for his eighth career LIV Golf victory. Nobody has won more tournaments in LIV Golf since its first season back in 2022. You know, they finished 72 holes, tied at 12 under par, and Niemann clinched his title with a short birdie putt on the first playoff hole. And LIV Golf Korea was only the second tournament since Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia announced that it's going to withdraw its financial support of the tour after this season. So since then, LIV has been scrambling to secure money from new investors, and there have been reports that it was preparing to file for bankruptcy in the U.S. So a lot of concerns that this might be the last edition of LIV Golf Korea, although Korea is still considered a pretty crucial market for this tour. I think it will likely survive even as LIV Golf reduces its schedule next year. You know, fans were treated to some solid golf. Players spoke of the course being an even tougher challenge than they had expected. And they also thanked the passionate Korean golf fans for their support throughout the week.
Mm-hmm. So despite that trouble, Niemann's added another LIV title. Korean fans got a competitive finish with that playoff. For now, it sounds like the tournament certainly delivered. Let's talk baseball now. In the KBO League, the SSG Landers are stuck in their franchise worst 12-game losing streak, and they'll try to snap out of it during the 6-game homestand this week. Jiho, give us the preview of the week ahead.
Yeah, so the Landers have not won since May 16th. They've fallen from 4th place in the KBO to 8th place during the free fall. They've gone from 2 games out of 1st place to now 10.5 games out of first place. This is the longest losing streak in club history, even dating back to their days as SK Wyverns. You know, to start the week, they're going to host a team with the second longest active losing streak, the last place Kiwoom Heroes. They've lost 8 in a row. So, you know, between these two teams, something's got to give at some point. You know, the Landers also lost 20 games in May. That's tied for the second most losses in a month ever in KBO history. So during this nosedive, the Landers are last in the KBO with .220 batting average, 40 runs scored, and .635 on-base plus slugging. On the pitching side, they're also worst in ERA, 6.39. They've given up 20 homers and issued 48 walks. So if you're giving up that many runs and not scoring enough, obviously you're not going to win that many games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they don't get it done versus the Heroes, I think the task will get even tougher because they will face second place KT Wiz. And the Wiz are only half game behind the LG Twins for the league lead. So the Wiz and Twins actually will collide for the midweek series in Suwon, home of the Wiz, starting Tuesday.
Mm. So it could be a pivotal week for the Landers, starting with that matchup against another struggling team in Kiwoom, but before a much tougher test against the KT Wiz. That's where we'll leave it for this week's Sports Roundup. That was sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News Agency bringing us the latest. Thanks so much, Ji-ho.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24. But we'll be back with more of the stories shaping life here in Korea and beyond. I've been your host, Alana Hill. Thank you for joining us. And until tomorrow, take care and goodbye.
What you're about to hear could save a life. These are step-by-step instructions for performing CPR, or cardiopulmonary resuscitation, a life-saving emergency procedure used when a person's heart is not functioning properly. First, if someone collapses and is unresponsive, ensure the scene is safe. Tap the patient's shoulder and shout, "Are you okay?" If the person remains unresponsive, if their breathing is abnormal, or if there are any signs of a seizure, immediately call 119 or your local emergency number or point out someone nearby to make the call. The faster you call, the better. You can also make a video call or send photos to the local emergency number. Start CPR immediately, rather than leaving the scene to find someone else for help or looking for a pulse. Place the heel of your dominant hand in the center of the person's chest. Place your other hand on top, keep your arms straight, and press hard and fast. Stay in the light, stay in the light. press hard and fast at a rate of 100 to 120 compressions per minute. That's the beat of Staying Alive, playing right now. Push in at least 2 inches or 5 centimeters and allow the chest to rise fully between compressions. If you are not trained and are not confident in rescue breathing, continue hands-only CPR until emergency medical personnel arrive. Immediate CPR can help maintain blood flow to the brain and vital organs. Acting quickly may save a life. This has been a public safety message on CPR. KBS World Radio is committed to keeping our listeners informed and prepared because knowing what to do in an emergency makes all the difference. Stay safe, stay informed.